Miguel and somebody else curated the festival, and they pushed it into another direction. And it's so less improvisational based. And I was saying this the other day at the project study, no,
studies project.
Yeah. On Sunday, that I come from a different improvisation culture because, okay, I studied here, but I never never performed here, and I studied improvisational forms and so on, but not as a performance form, but as a work form. Mm-hmm. And for the that's how I took
it. As a working process versus like a performative.
Yes, by then,
method.
Yes. By then, yes. But then I have been, I've had the luck to be invited by several people who always propose me improvisation projects which go in a less traditional direction of, you know, I don't know, of contact improv or of...
You've been part of Crash Landing.
Yes, I did Crash Landing. I was very lucky. I did all of the improvisation projects with Meg.
Uh-huh.
Crash Landing. And I've been doing At the Table, which is a new improv project that she has.
Also of Nextory.
Yes.
Okay.
Since a few years she has it, I don't know, at least three or four.
Okay.
We do it, I don't know, once or twice a year. At the good years we do it like twice a year, and sometimes now it's been less. We did it last year, but it's a project I completely love because the set is an enormous amount of tables all put together, which make a gigantic table, which is the stage.
Mm-hmm.
But
so you're on top of the table.
We can. But everybody is sitting around this gigantic table, mm-hmm. us and the public, and it's like a summit table, you know, these gigantic mm-hmm. tables with lots of people around, and there are microphones. And the proposal is really that this is a summit, this is a conference, this is a
okay.
place where we're coming to discuss things and talk about things, and
mm-hmm.
and we have to improvise with a lot of speech because that's the proposal.
Oh, okay.
But we
this is very near and dear to you, no?
This is one of my loved projects.
Yeah.
Because it's really a place. Because then the table and all the space is also there for us to behave and perform in every way we want. We can dance, we can, you know, we can do actions, I don't know, we can do whatever, you know, it's an improvisation.
Yeah.
But it's not at all in the idea of this is a movement improvisation.
Mm-hmm.
It can be,
mm-hmm.
but it can be many other things too.
Mm-hmm.
As Meg proposals have always been,
yeah.
because Crash Landing was really like, you know, it's this, Meg comes from an improvisational culture,
mm-hmm.
she loves improvisation, and she was in Europe since a few years when she started Crash Landing, and she really wanted to propose a project where improvisation is the thing we're working on, but goes somewhere else than the traditional usual mm-hmm. improv forms that we may know.
Mm-hmm.
And so since the beginning that I started improvising, immediately as a response or trying to go into another area than those more traditional improvisation places. And that's...
What do you think the traditional improv places
jams,
are?
Jams. Uh-huh. Contact improv situations where I guess you're supposed to use a certain language in
right.
improvisation.
Yeah.
And you're not
weight.
Supposed to yes, and you're not supposed to get out of them.
Yeah.
And
do you think because you use language? I mean, when I saw the other night at Dance Space Project,
yeah.
you seem to use verbal language or verbal sounds
uh-huh.
a lot.
That was more sounds, but I liked...
Yeah.
I didn't dare hear so much to use language. I didn't feel... I don't know.
But it became this kind of the way you're using the sound with the gesture becomes very, for me, there was a couple of moments where it became very language oriented.
Yes.
Because it became this kind of narrative.
Yes.
You know, or it allowed it allowed one to perceive like a kind of clear emotive state or narrative state, you know, the sort of coddling, you know, with the...
Yeah, with Jenny.
Yeah, and sort of with the rocking, and then with this kind of fast, you know, thing. I mean, it starts to then introduce this kind of theatricality that maybe doesn't normally exist in this sort of traditional
frames.
Improv frames that, that you were saying a moment ago.
So I feel lucky that, because then the next project I was invited into was Mark Tompkins in France, who was doing a big improvisation festival called On the Edge.
Okay.
This was in 98.
Okay.
And he invited Steve, Lisa Nelson, Franz Polstra, Julian Hamilton, David Zambrano, João Fiedeiro, me, a few musicians also. So there was really a lot of people from that usually use improvisation, but he really wanted to push it also somewhere else. He had been seeing Crash Landing, and he had been even in one of the Crash Landings.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he was in Paris. I think he was a bit like an outside eye. I don't remember if he actually improvised with us, but he was there working with us.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if he was,
Just for Crash Landings, when you guys got together for a public performance, would you meet prior?
We would meet some 2 or 3 days prior.
Yeah.
And we would work like super hard because my extrovert loves to work super hard. Like all day long until you're like dead.
Yeah, yeah.
And
no, I heard this from a friend of mine that auditioned for her.
Yeah.
It was a very difficult
She's so crazy.
Audition. Very exhausting.
To work with her as a performer for her work must be even like more crazy.
Yeah.
There, you know, you're still like an improviser, so you can have your own. But she, and I loved her direction of the project. I love it. She really wants to, she gives you a very clear parameters of, it's not scores, it's very curious, it's not scores, it's a vision of a situation of intensities, of intentions, of places where she wants this to arrive to, and she's there. It's quite curious. It's a quite curious process. With Crash Landing, what was very
interesting. Do you think it has her authorship, though? Like, I wonder.
It has her direction.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call it authorship.
Okay.
She's not making a composition. She's because it's a real-time composition of everybody. But she is very clearly framing it in a very specific way.
Yeah.
She is.
And there's a major difference between this Crash Landing and this table.
At the table?
At the table.
It's quite different because the situation is very different. In Crash Landing, there were artists from various disciplines, namely visual artists and light artists. Visual artists were very important for me there. And also because they were really, and costume artists.
Oh, okay.
Because they were really changing the space and our outfits in real time. That was super interesting. Like, you know, you could start with the show with a space like this and end the show with a completely different space.
Yeah.
And in between you would have had a lot of different
evolutions
for this space. And that's where performance is amazing, you know, because you're not working with a set space. The space is also, and maybe suddenly you have a material on top of you, and which changes completely your behavior, your weight, your everything, your appearance, whatever. It was so music, space, costume, light, and sometimes some of the performers were more from other fields of performance, maybe from music, maybe from voice or from theater or from other performance area.
Yeah, yeah.
And that made it, that made it, for me, very, and very curious as an improviser, because it had nothing to do with those more traditional. It showed me other possibilities, really, to have a completely improvised piece. You see, it was took it into another realm, took it more into the improvised piece than into the improv session. You see.
So somehow, like these outside elements are actually creating the structure.
Yes.
Organizing this improv event into an actual piece, rather than just being this kind of jam session.
Absolutely, absolutely. Much more theatrical, at least in the sense that, you know,
we receive it as an audience, or you're participating in it as a performer. Yeah.
And then the parameters for At the Table are just that this is supposed to be a conference. You are supposed to improvise with speech. Together with action, movement, whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
But speech has to be there and you have to improvise with it. And
who's participating in this?
Dancers.
Yeah.
She started this with Benoît Lachambre and Boris Charmat.
Okay.
And then she went on with her company producing this event. So that's one rule, speaking, this is a speaking event, and there's much less, I mean, there are no visual artists changing the space. We can change the space because actually the tables can, we can move them, like, you can make a hole in the middle of the big table if you take some tables out, or we can, but it's different, it's not the main, it's not as main focus as it was in Crash Landing, because there were really people there just to work on that. It's just if, it's only if we want, play with that. And there are musicians again, so it's, and...
Are the musicians expected to talk?
They are not expected to talk.
Okay.
But that's a very good question, why are they expected? The talk and not the dancers.
Because a conference doesn't normally have musicians.
I know. Definitely. And musicians are terrible. They don't want to talk ever. They don't want to talk ever.
Well, I'm really curious, though. I mean, just in your personal work. And
I would just like to say one more thing,
please.
About At the Table.
Yeah.
Which is, it's being this place where you're really digging into the relationship between verbal and non-verbal. Really, really, sorry. It's from here. Hello? Hello? Can't hear anything. No, I can't hear anything. Hi. Can't hear. It's really, for me, it's really working on that place, which is a place which I'm really interested in.
Yeah.
So for me it's such a treat to do At the Table when I can do it. Because I've never seen a place where you're so clearly there in that line in between those two realms of verbal and non-verbal.
But you do this.
I do, that's...
In your...
Yeah, I do. I do, but improvising, speaking was quite new to me, and it's quite, it's quite frightening, you know, 'cause Sure. Once you said something, it's said, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, this is like one basic fear about improvising with speech, like...
Yeah.
But then, of course, I practice a lot of verbal things, and so at some point in that process, in that at the table thing, I found my place, and I could really play with it. It was, at the beginning, it was hard, because it's a hard place for our culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's always separate. You don't have places where these two things are together.
Mm-hmm.
It's either you're thinking, talking, writing, ta-da-da, yep. Or you're in an abstract, whatever, realm, and...
Living and experiencing and feeling are...
Yes. And the
somehow they're supposed to be separate, but they're,
yes,
I mean, they're not.
Yes.
They're not.
Yes. I mean, they're not.
Society maybe says the culture.
I think our culture is really body-mind split, right? There's this whole thing, this body and mind affair with usually the mind on top and the body in the bottom.
Yeah.
I mean, in classical culture, that's the thing.
The organization, yeah.
And so, place, I think... places where you really work them together, work the fusion of them, or work the shift, the quick shifts between them, or whatever, are very precious places,
mm-hmm.
because they're very rare,
mm-hmm.
they're very, very rare,
mm-hmm.
and I mean, and we are trained, you know, we are either more trained to... Maybe that's changing, I hope that's changing, but it's rare that, you know, that in thought schools you practice body, and it's rare that in body schools you practice a lot of thought, reading, writing.
Yeah.
That's changing.
Dance it's changing.
Yeah, but not in the thought schools, right? In philosophy faculties or
whatever. There's no movement, there's no BMC class. If you're a philosophy student at a university, but there are philosophy classes in a lot of the more progressive
mm-hmm.
and newer,
mm-hmm.
and here too is really changing. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, when I was talking to Martin, he said he was really surprised in the discussion that he had through movement research that people already had a sort of understanding of discourse,
mm-hmm.
and that they're really wanting to talk a lot.
Absolutely.
That he thought when he taught this class that he was going to have to lecture.
Uh-huh. And it was not like that at all. I was so interested
in
that.
People were so questioning. He said it was like one of the most questioning groups that he had. That was my understanding.
I believe it. Because I think he... because I came to the first class to see... So what has Martin to say these days? What is he thinking?
Uh-huh.
I wanted to understand where is he at and what's he doing.
Yeah.
And then I was like, really like, okay, I'm coming back because of the people, because I'm really like enjoying this questioning and this answering back, and super interesting with a lot of information that really was, you know, very pertinent.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kept coming, and I came all the 3 days.
Oh, really?
I did. Really enjoyed meeting the people and hearing them, and it was very interesting. So, and I could see that he was a bit, like, derooted, how do you say it?
Uh-huh, yeah.
By, like, all these things showing up, which were not allowing him to lecture, just simply, and...
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah. Are you finding a difference between the community here and the sort of community that you're normally participating, if you identify yourself even as part of this kind of community somewhere?
Uh-huh.
You were talking about, since you live in Portugal,
yes.
you know, that you're sort of, as you said, in the middle.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
And I wonder what kind of, that's an improv of sorts too, I think.
Yeah. How can I say? Because, like, I'm trying to figure out, you know, in what community do I insert myself these days? I guess in a very, quite European one,
mm-hmm.
Because I'm always traveling, and I can't say I feel just part of this Portuguese community. Although, I feel like more and more staying in Portugal because I'm kind of quite tired of traveling and always being everywhere and so on. But, it's very dispersing too, this story of touring all the time and being on projects and and then at some point it's quite dispersing and I'm getting bigger. It's not to say I'm getting older. I'm getting bigger and I feel like really I need the time to focus on the things I want to focus on, to go deeper in the things I want to. But anyway, about the community, I would say I haven't been here in some 6 years. And I've been here for a week and something now. It's hard to say. It's really hard to say. But I don't know, maybe this first thing I would maybe say is that I see that this community is dealing and struggling with the, let's say, the conceptual shock, you know, because I think everybody in dance at some point had to face, what are we going to do now with what Jérôme Bell or other people like that are proposing? How are we going to now go on, answer back, whatever? I mean, it was a very strong, it's been a very strong impact.
I mean, already it's kind of old, almost.
So, people are, also like...
Or, you know, some of the proposals of Jérôme Bell, I mean, these are 10 years or more
absolutely,
now.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But yeah, still somehow resonating.
Because, you know, for instance, seeing this, this evening on Monday. Well, Martin is Martin, but the piece of the other four. Is a strictly non-body piece, strictly. So it's like, I have the impression it's like there is this Jérôme Bell schism, whatever, and then there's like a movement so of the communities like towards the complete opposites of body, let's say. And then it's taking a while to get back into another place. But I think we are getting starting to get into another place, which is a place, I guess, I don't know, that may allow both. May allow maybe that it doesn't mean that thinking doesn't mean body does not exist anymore. Or
I feel like the proposal, these kind of conceptual proposals that have occurred within dance, have now are now starting to just be assimilated as a kind of vocabulary that exists within dance, right? So there's kind of these methodologies that have been derived from, right, the talking body that now can be assimilated into the performative body, you know, and they can really fluidly go back and forth, you know, and you don't have to just do the proposal on stage where you only sit and talk or sit and show an object, you know. I think it needed to happen, but somehow hopefully it can now just become part of a fabric, you know, or you know,
and
an expanded vocabulary.
And I have to say that I particularly appreciate in Jérôme's work the fact that I didn't see this piece with Pichette. I didn't. I guess the last piece I saw. And I didn't see the Véronique Duanou. I didn't see the ballerina.
I've seen those.
But so I guess the last piece I saw was the Chambre Go On. I think. But I think in some way Jérôme never quit the body, actually. And he never quit poetics.
Right. That's right.
In the sense, like, I think he likes to
He still likes to dream.
I don't know. He likes to have moments which are which make you really feel things and not just think things. And so he likes to work with the theatrical procedures that make you feel things.
Yeah.
And when I say he never left the body, is because I don't know. One of his two first pieces, "Nom donné par l'auteur" and Jérôme Bell.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, especially thinking of Jérôme Bell. Jérôme Bell is just like. Is a super body piece. I mean, the body is like there in such an important way.
I can't help but to think of your piece, Josephine Baker.
Yeah.
Because this was happened. I don't know. I don't know the times off.
Yeah.
At the same time, I don't know if it was before or after.
I did it in 96.
Okay. So I mean, this is all kind of starting at the same time, or maybe you were even doing this piece a little earlier than.
I had just... Jérôme did Nom donné par l'auteur in 93,
okay.
I think, and Jérôme Bell in 94.
Okay. I think that your piece, Josephine Baker, really is this embodied piece that...
Mm-hmm. Well, there's these two...
hooves, right? You're kind of standing on the hooves that are...
Yeah.
So you're forcing your body to deal with just learning to stand still. I mean, this is what I understand. I don't know, but maybe I'm really interested in that.
There's many things I could say about that piece.
Yeah.
Where shall we start?
I mean, maybe just to kind of stay within this, I wonder, just on a, like on a... On a purely like body arrangement level, you know, or body organization of just being able to stand in this precarious situation, you know, the improvisational aspect of that,
I can say a few things about that.
Yeah.
Maybe the first thing that comes to my mind, and that I was thinking, I don't know, yesterday or these days, because the spirit has been questioning me also quite a bit, you know. One of the things is that, you know, I since the beginning of what I did in Portugal and then very soon in Europe and. But especially in Portugal, I think, I was very quickly accused that I was not dancing. Even with things which today are, we look at them and we find there's like lots of body or dance or something, but very soon there was this thing, they're not dancing. And it's true that there was a difficulty in just allowing yourself to dance, a difficulty in thinking that that was an obvious thing to do, that it was an acquired fact. I don't know how do you translate a given fact. So that didn't seem like an obvious thing to do.
Uh-huh.
You see?
Yeah.
And in the sense, I think in the sense that I would look for, or we would look for, because by then I really felt I was inside a group of people that were dealing with this thing.
Because you were kind of, there was a sort of community developing within Portugal?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It seems really important that
Mm-hmm.
That there was a sort of...
It was super important.
Something happening, and it wasn't just one person. Like
It was super important.
And there was somebody writing about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so kind of giving a weight.
Yeah. I
mean, like we were talking about earlier, that this mind-body separation occurs within culture.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, the body needed the mind.
Yeah.
My understanding, you know, to sort of... make it approachable, maybe, for the outside, for the person who says, oh, this isn't dance, then they don't know how to approach it when you're saying it is dance.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we, of course, understand it's dance, of course, but if somebody else doesn't, how do you, how do you dare explain to them, like, this paradigm shift, you know?
No, it was definitely important.
Do you explain it through experience, or do you explain it through words? Or a combination there of the two.
I think a combination probably of things, of several factors.
Yeah.
But just to...
Yeah.
Because I think this is important, that... the feeling that it's not an obvious thing, like a given fact, something you just simply do as if it was obvious to do. And also... trying to do it and not, I mean, searching for the form which is possible, which you permit, which you permit, like, how can I explain this, that it doesn't create an allergy to you, you know, that you find it's possible to put it out without feeling like you're gonna die.
Yeah.
And that is still wanting to have a body that puts out something. It's still trying. It's not that it said, no, I don't want more body. No, it's still trying, even if it's not succeeding.
Mm-hmm.
But it is trying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very different from saying, I don't need...
need the body.
Yeah, it's very different. And I connect this... many years ago, in 1993, Max Stewart